crowd on its feet. 20,000 plus here, trying to be that sixth man. Fires a long one. Oh, the bottom! I can't take it anymore!
Welcome to The Bottom Up, a show about the Cleveland Cavaliers and NBA basketball.
She's a silver lining, Lone Ranger riding through an open space. In my mind, when she's not right there beside me, I go crazy, cause here is where I wanna be. And satisfaction feels like a distant memory. And I can't help myself, alright. Wanna ever say, is that you mind?
Yeah, episode 5 of the Bottom Up Show. Logan, how you feel about it?
I feel good. Thanks for asking.
I love to ask.
Thanks.
We're still here.
Yeah, I feel really good.
Yeah. One of these days you'll feel bad and that'll be the last episode. So we got a lot to talk about. It's been a, actually we don't have a lot to talk about. Let's not even sugarcoat it. Not much has happened in the NBA. Kyrie Irving got hurt and that has killed our souls. And the Cavs didn't play much this week, but we do have a couple interesting segments. So we're going to jump in. We'll talk about Kyrie's shoulder injury, the implications of it. Is he made of glass? Is he perhaps not mentally strong enough to play through pain? As some would put it, more classy. Kobe's ankle injury. What does that mean for the Lakers? This only matters because the Cavs can have the Lakers draft pick if they make the playoffs. The Heat's 20-game win streak. Do we want to kill ourselves because of it and the nonstop coverage of it? Or are we actually to the point where we're like, all right, cool, the Heat actually play good basketball and we're okay with them? To be determined. And then I start a new recurring segment. We're going to tackle two playoff teams per episode and why they might be legit title contenders or why they might not be legit title contenders. So today we'll start with Boston and Houston. All right, so Logan, Kyrie goes down shoulder injury, clearly doesn't know how to fall. So how do you feel about Kyrie's injury history at this point?
It's a little much. He gets hurt a lot. A lot. Like, he's... Yeah. I know he's young. People keep telling me, oh, he's young. But there's a lot of injuries all over the spectrum, too. I mean, we got broken hands, sprained shoulders. It's a little disconcerting. It makes me uncomfortable. I'm not too pumped about it. I realize we don't have much to play for. I mean, actually, we have nothing to play for. But
literally nothing at all. Almost into the reverse. We actually have things to not play for.
I don't know, though. Maybe it's just my mentality that even though we have nothing to play for, like, I see it as, you know, we got most of our future here already. You know, people see it that way, at least. You know, we got Kyrie, Dion. People expect a lot of things from Tristan. You got Zeller.
Yeah. You've got 3/5 of the starting lineup for the core. Perhaps, if you like Zeller enough, 4/5.
Exactly. So, I feel like the best thing for them is to play. And so, I understand, you know, you want to get more ping pong balls. I totally get it. That's sound reasoning. But I just feel like, you know, I want them to play more together, get more experience. Yeah. Because next year, I'm going to be bummed if we're not competing for that playoff spot. You know what I mean? And so, whatever we need to do to get there is what I'm for. So I feel like that playing time would be nice for them. But I don't know. I don't know how you feel about this.
I feel like from a draft perspective, it's hard for me to be upset because there are 5 or 6 teams that are within a game of the Cavs record right now. And that's going to be the difference between perhaps the 4th pick or the 4th best odds for the lottery and the 10th pick best odds. So if that's the difference, if Kyrie being extraordinarily cautious with an injury or trying not to play through an injury that maybe on a playoff team he would play through or he'd be asked to play through, if that's going to be the difference for us between getting a primetime player, PTP, or like Otto Porter, or ending up with, you know, some... Who even knows what'll be available? It's going to be picked over a little bit, and we definitely need a big time wing to fill.
I trust Chris Grant to find a diamond in the rough, no matter where we are.
Yeah, you hope so.
I'm hoping.
But, you know, it'll be easier for him to find the diamond not in the rough. I'd like the diamond in the fairway.
Yeah, no kidding. Have you got
it? I don't think that saying is a golf reference, but I like to think that it is. But anyways, as far as Kyrie's shoulder. Or the Kyrie injury history. I, It does worry me, and I think a lot of it, I see a lot of talk on Twitter amongst the Cleveland bloggers and just different sports fans that, you know, if he can hit the gym in the offseason, put on, you know, 10, 20 pounds of muscle. We call this the Hedo plan here at the Bottom Up Show.
Yeah, 10, 20 pounds. By the way, people keep talking like, oh, you just need to go. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
That is a ton of weight. Like, that is a hard workout regimen. Like,
yeah.
I've been trying to put 10, 20 pounds of muscle on for like 4 years.
Yeah, you know, and I wonder. I mean, I think Kyrie is very motivated.
Yeah, go to the gym.
Work on his game on the court. I don't know how motivated he is to lift the weights. He's got a Brazilian girlfriend already. I feel like he's already there. Like, what?
Yeah,
what
I mean, yeah. If I had a Brazilian girlfriend, I definitely would never go inside a gym.
No, I'd be on the coast of, you know, Saint-Tropez or something like that. French Riviera, just chilling. Living life, man. Making it rain.
I don't know. But, I think it worries me. It worries me big time. But
I mean, you probably know better than I do, because I really do. You know, I don't lift much, if you couldn't tell. I know you lift a little more than I do. Do you think that even if he did add 10, 20 pounds of muscle, I mean, is this really going to protect him better from what seems to be somewhat freak injuries?
Like, oh, I think it can, you know, especially from, like, if he trains himself correctly, you know, like sprained shoulders and things like that. You know, you can combat, I mean, you can never be 100% like injury proof, but mm-hmm. definitely if you bulk up and things like that, you can definitely help prevent, like, you know, there's different exercises and stuff, especially if he's got like weak rotator cuffs or something.
Right. So is it the muscles that would help the joint
kind of
under impact or whatever?
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, at the same time though, when it comes to basketball,
he's had some breaks too though.
If you gain 10 pounds, like, I don't know. I've always heard that, like, a lot of people don't like to lift too much. I mean, it messes up your J.
Yeah, back in the 1980s, that was a school of thought. And then a guy named Michael Jordan in the early 1990s.
Oh, but dude, no, it's totally still a school of thought. I mean, people still think that way. It messes with your J a little bit.
Yeah, they're named Dan Shaughnessy and Bob Ryan or something.
I'm just saying, it's something to think about. I'm not saying that's ever a good excuse, but people totally believe it, is all I'm saying.
Here's what I read in David Halberstam's what was it called? Playing for Keeps, which is the best Jordan book.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
An amazing book. He details Jordan's decision to work with Tim Grover, the trainer, back in the early 90s with the Bulls, and really put on muscle. And he was definitely one of the first guys to really, especially a wing or a guard, to do that. Obviously, a big, it was less important, the jump shot. But with Jordan, what he learned is that, yes, it does mess with your jump shot. You're stronger, so your touch is different. But it was what he ended up doing was he lifted, and then worked on his jump shot a ton. So it was this idea that the school of thought wasn't wrong. Like, yeah, it'll absolutely mess up your jump shot. But what you have to do is just get your jump shot back. And if you've already got it once, it's not like you're going to forget how to shoot. It's not like you've had a spinal cord injury, you had to relearn how to walk. I mean, this is, you're a little stronger, so you just readjust your jump shot. It's like moving from, you know, when Kyrie moved from the college three-point line to the NBA three-point line, there's an adjustment period, and it might take a minute. And Kyrie's a great enough shooter that shouldn't be a problem.
So, I know, I hear what you're saying, you're right. I mean, I was just throwing that out there. Don't people, you know, it's definitely
a
school
of thought. It's a throwback episode of the Bottom Up Show. I always wanted to do a 70s theme, you know, but it is what it is, Logan. Yeah.
Dude, that's totally a school of thought.
Yeah, so was fascism.
Why aren't they all beefed up then? I'll tell you. I don't want to talk about this. Let's move on. Kobe Bryant.
Kobe's ankle. Kobe's not ankle. Big. I'll cope bigger than Kyrie, though, at least. But yeah, sprained the ankle. Says it's his worst sprain. He's only sprained the ankle, or really seriously sprained the ankle, twice in his career. Once in 2000. I guess Jalen Rose was the culprit there. We always have to blame someone if Kobe sprains an ankle.
Jalen came out and said, like, yeah, I totally, it's a movie.
What, he stick a foot under him or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, he totally did it.
Kobe probably deserved it. Kobe's kind of a prick. Not kind of. Kobe is a prick, and you either like him for it or you don't, but I feel like if you're a prick, occasionally you're going to get what's coming.
If you want to be, I hate that. No, dude, no. It's not like he's fouling people intentionally and like hurting them. He's just better than you.
No, he's probably telling people that their girlfriend tastes like Honey Nut Cheerios.
Beat him on the court. That was Garnett. Beat him on the court. That's what I say. If he makes you mad, beat him on the court. If he says something to upset you, beat him on the court. Don't like hurt him. Ruin his career. That's awful.
I think by definition, spraining Kobe's ankle for him on the court is beating him on the court.
I mean, For Dante Jones, yes.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I mean, that's it. Like, Jalen Rose back in the day could play. He had a short window where he was amazing, but he could play, not at Kobe's level, but he could play. So I guess
amazing, he was good, but amazing.
He had a short little window amazing? Where he was actually pretty nice.
Amazing's a big word to me. Like, that's
as a scorer.
He's all right. He was no Jermaine O'Neal in his prime.
Okay. Like, point conceeded, I guess.
Giving me
no
chills.
Bill Russell either, but...
Yeah. I know, it's a random... That's a random one.
I mean, they played together in Indy, right?
Yeah, that's why I thought of it. I was, just like,
I was kind of wondering at first.
I get such a kick out of Jermaine O'Neal. That's why I jumped to him, because he's just such... I don't know, he's been around for, like, 8 years now, where he's just been totally crap. And I just remember, like, back in the day when he was, the man.
Yeah. It's almost like that old Yogi Berra saying, where I'm assuming it's Yogi Berra, it sounds like one of the Berraisms, where it's like, it gets late early around here, and with Jermaine O'Neal, it's like, he got old young, and then he just keeps sticking around.
I don't know why. Yeah. I do not get it. He's going to be hurt half the season if you sign him anyway. But that's neither here nor there.
Not in Phoenix, the Lakers, though, bro. Not in
the
Phoenix.
The Lakers. On topic. The Lakers. Kobe's probably going to be back anyway, so this story's like...
Yeah, they're saying he's a game-time decision.
Yeah,
tonight.
This might not even be worth discussing, but...
I don't even think it's worth it, though. Like, wouldn't you sit him for at least a few games? As bad as the Jazz are playing right now.
Not D'Antoni. D'Antoni will run him ragged.
That's true.
He could have a broken leg. D'Antoni's like, I got to give him 40-plus minutes.
Got to run through it, Kobe. Got to run through it. That's what we did in Italy.
Don't get me started. That's what he ruined Amari. Ruined Amari for the Knicks. Really, I think he made this, plan a long time ago to just, ruin the Knicks by just running Amari ragged, and then he knew he was going to go somewhere else. It's a conspiracy.
Figures he'll coach for 29 other teams, and then eventually he'll get to that last team that's still healthy. And is that the conspiracy?
That's his idea. Though? He's going to keep running everybody down. He's going to kill Kobe. Dwight's back. He's just going to finally give. Nash is 50. He's already inhaling oxygen on the sideline. The Lakers are done. Next year they'll be done. They're too old. He's moving on. He killed the Knicks. He knows what he's a disease. He's a cancer in the league. It's awful.
See, I happen to think that with Kobe out, whether it's for one game, a week, maybe longer, it might actually be useful for the Lakers as far as guys like Nash, Pau Gasol's coming back perhaps this weekend, maybe even next week, Dwight Howard. Those guys haven't had a chance to assert themselves outside of the shadow of Kobe. And they're trying to build chemistry with each other. And I think do you agree with it? Do you think that it might be useful for them to actually get some court time?
I think it would have been useful. I mean, I think this would have been better if this happened weeks ago. When, now it's so close and the pressure's on to get that last playoff spot. And I think it would have been really good weeks ago where Nash and Dwight could work on their pick and roll together and get more comfortable with having Kobe taking the ball in the third quarter and shooting it 20 times. But... Now, I think it's good now, but it's kind of pressure situation, so I don't think Kobe's going to miss, any time. I wouldn't be surprised if he plays tonight, so.
Yeah, I mean, he's such a monster.
He's a monster. No one's like him.
He's getting treatment 24/7, so we'll see, but I do think that it won't be the end of the world for the Lakers if he misses a few games, and I think the Jazz are bad enough right now that they should be able to hang on to that spot, as long as it's not... an extended injury, which it doesn't appear to be.
Doesn't appear to me.
It's just a matter of how effective is Kobe going to be with his ankle, and that's the big question. Not if he's going to miss a month.
It's not like they're going to make much noise in the playoffs. We just need him to get in so we can get the pick, and I think they will.
We'll see. In the world.
Yeah.
Right. So, let's move on. Heat, 20-game win streak. How do you feel about the Heat? As Cleveland fans, are we supposed to still hate the Heat? Are they just another team now?
It's too exhausting.
Where are we supposed to fall in this?
It's too exhausting to hate the Heat. They're too entertaining. It's like, I guess as long as I can use it as an excuse to watch them. Like, oh, I hate them so much. Like, I want them to lose, so I'm going to watch all of their games, sir, and enjoy them. Because they're just too entertaining. They're the best team in the league. And this 20 win streak is impressive. It's maybe being talked about just a little too much. Because... It's just, I don't know, they're beating it like a dead horse.
It's
but
everywhere, yeah.
But it is amazing. It's very impressive, and they are so good. It's just, they're too good to ignore.
Right. Yeah, I mean, when LeBron, when the decision happened and Bosch went to the Heat too, I mean, it was very easy to hate them on paper and the idea of them, where it was like they were cheating almost by signing up together. But what I've been so impressed with, and I was a Spoelstra fan, obviously before they even got LeBron and stuff, I think he's a great, you know, hardworking type coach, progressive in a lot of ways. I know they take into account a lot of statistical things. The question was, could he manage those personalities? And the reason I stopped hating the Heat, and more specifically hating LeBron, was over the past 2 years, they have come together in a way where I guessed wrong at the style that they were going to play. I thought they were going to play this hero ball, inefficient kind of like, you know, me type of thing. But really, they've become almost the most selfless team in the league. They play such an efficient style of basketball, a fun style of basketball. They play the game in a timeless kind of way, I would say. And I would put them right up there in their way that they play with any of the great teams, you know, of the past. Whether or not they could beat those teams, but just the way that they can dominate a game and how poetic it almost is. When they make the right pass every freaking time.
Yeah, so selfless.
It's so hard to hate because they are not, you know, they're not the old Jailblazers or whatever. It was just about getting stats. And that's what I thought they would kind of be like, where it would be like LeBron getting his stats, whatever else. And instead, it's been so organic and it's been such an impressive coaching job
for Spoelstra. Dude, in the defense of the Jailblazers, in the beginning, they were a really good team. And then they just kind of sprouted.
Yeah, they had some pieces. Well, that's what happens, though.
Yeah, and I'm just saying.
Heat have gone the opposite direction.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, you know, it makes it easy, though. And, I mean, I'm not knocking the Heat. They're very selfless and it's great stuff. But I'm just saying it makes it pretty easy to pass the ball. If you're LeBron James and you're slinging it to Dwayne Wade and Ray Allen and Shane Battier at the three or tossing it inside to Chris Bosh, like, I wouldn't have a problem passing the ball either. You know what I mean?
Right. And that's – it's cool, though, that they've – developed a culture, I guess I would say, where it makes all of them, like, what I love to see is when, you know, like, LeBron will kick it to Battier or something like that, and then Battier kicks it to Chalmers, or Battier kicks it to, you know, someone else that's open, and when you
the
see
hockey,
that infectious
yeah.
nature of the selflessness, where it's not just like, oh, LeBron has passed me the ball, it is my time to shoot, you know? No, those guys are veterans, and they're willing to pass up their own shot if there's another guy more open, and that's just... It's
really good to watch, yeah.
I don't think anyone's taking the Heat down this year, but that'll be a later conversation.
Later conversation.
Yeah, so let's jump into this new segment. We don't have a name for it yet. What did you want to call it? Why or why not?
Why or why not? Yeah, it's simple. Gets the point across.
You know, we'll call it why or why not with the parentheses working title.
Yeah, it's really not that good, but like, why are they going to win? Why aren't they going to win? It's perfect.
Sometimes. Yeah, and I picked up, I think our 14 listeners... I would understand the concept of why or why not. I don't think I'd explain
it's
that.
It's exhaustive to be the creative mind. I just want to make sure everybody gets it.
It's a huge weight.
It's a big undertaking.
Actually, if you are one of those 14 people that listens to this podcast and you have a great title...
Right, we get more than 14. You're making it sound like...
I'm not convinced that we do, but, you know... If you're one of the hordes in the masses that listens to this show... please listen to the segment. Don't try to think of a title now. That would be ridiculous. You don't even know what we're going to do yet. But listen to the segment. Once the segment's over, or while you're listening to the segment, you start to get a feel for it. Maybe a creative, amazing idea will pop into your head for a title for the segment. Then hop on the Twitter machine at the Bottom Up Show. Send us a little tweet. Maybe hit us on Facebook. Hit that like button as you send us a message. Just, you know, why not? And you know, let us know what your title idea is. And then have 20 other people listen to the podcast and have them think about titles too. And I think that is fair for all the amazing content we're giving you.
I'm exhausted. So, while we're at it, Haddadi! No, it's...
Right, yeah, check out the blog.
Let's move on.
But anyways, let's get to the actual segment, which is we're going to take two playoff teams each episode and talk about why or why not they might be legit. So let's start out east first. We're going to go with the Boston Celtics. Logan, where do you fall on this? Are the Celtics legit as far as being title contenders?
Well, I'll tackle why they won't pull it off. And I'm pretty comfortable in saying...
Why they will not? So we're taking the not here.
I'm taking that. I'm pretty comfortable in saying they're not going to pull it off.
Okay.
Mainly, biggest thing is, last year, though, I was blown away by Boston. I did not think... I thought, you heard it for about 5 years. Ever since they won a championship, it was like, this is the year, they're too old. And I was convinced, though, last year, definitely too old. Like, all the controversy, Ray Allen not playing as many minutes, and I was like, all right, finally they're old. But no, they played amazing basketball. The grit they played with was just, you know, they're veteran savvy, you know. They'll let you win a few games in a playoff series, but then all of a sudden, before you know it, you're down two, and it's back in Boston. And but this year, they don't have Ray Allen, which isn't, that's not what's going to kill them, though. The biggest thing is, they don't have Rajon Rondo. And Rondo, though everyone said, oh, he's left and they're playing better, like, oh, they're moving the ball better, Rondo's a poison to their team. That's just Rondo being Rondo. In the regular season, the guy's going to try to just pad his stats. He's not playing that hard. That's just, they know that's Rondo. But in the playoffs, he is a beast. One of the top five players in this league. And if you don't agree with me, just watch the highlights of last year's playoff. No one could play like Rondo. That was, he played some beautiful basketball. And Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett are the two best players on this team. And they can only give you, in my opinion, from what I've seen this season, they can only give you about 10-15 minutes of elite level play a night because they're just too old. And I don't know if they can find the fountain of youth again. And without Rondo helping them, I just don't see it's gonna, I don't see how it could possibly happen.
I was once young and naive like you, Logan. And then in June of 2012, I moved to Boston. And I've spent the past 8 months here. And to be honest with you, I now sip the Kool-Aid every morning as I look at a replica version of their title ring from, what was it, 09 or whatever? So, one of those years. Maybe 08.
It wasn't.
Where I fall on this...
No, it wasn't. It was 08. Sorry, yeah. Continue.
I'm always right eventually. Where I fall on this is I, too, have counted them out every single freaking year since they made the trade. But really, I remember sitting in a hallway waiting to go to class at Miami. It would have been like 09 or whatever the year, whatever year the Cavs, or no, it would have been 2010 with the year LeBron left. So going into that series, the last series, where LeBron devastatingly injured his elbow and has never been the same since after that devastating elbow injury. Going into that series,
rubbing off
I was
on Kyrie.
So
it's contagious
confident.
In Cleveland.
Yeah, seriously. He left that mojo. But I was so confident that, oh, this old-ass Celtics team, they can't do, like, they're not going to stop LeBron. Come on now. And frankly, in one of those games, they could not stop LeBron. But then they figured it out. And I've been trying to count them out every year since. And what I've learned from watching them is that they are the Spurs of the East, just with slightly less success, because the Spurs have been a, you know,
Spurs are a way better team, but continue.
Well, no, but the point I'm making is they're the Spurs of the East in that they have reached the point, because they're so old, their core is so old, that the regular season is really not that important to them, as long as they're in the dance a little bit. And with Rondo, I totally buy that Rondo is an amazing point guard, and in the playoffs he's amazing too. But since he's gotten hurt, I think they're more of a contender now than they were before he got hurt. Hear me out on this.
No.
I understand he ups his game in the playoffs. Here's the difference for me, though. We're not talking about if you're a contender in theory. Because in all, the practical path to the finals for the Boston Celtics is going to go through the Heat. That's the path for anyone in the East that isn't Miami themselves. You got to go through the Heat. And whether it's, you know, second round, Eastern Conference Finals, whatever that time comes where they have to play the Heat. For them to, the Heat are so good defensively, that for them to have a point guard who can't shoot, that allows the Heat to sag off of it. And we know how good Dwayne Wade and LeBron James are at playing free safety defense, where they just can cover massive zones, you know, on defense off the ball. It's devastating. And with Rondo not being able to shoot with any consistency, even if he picks his game up in the playoffs, he's still not a shooter that you really want to count on. I think that that plays right into what the Heat like to do best. So I do think that while on paper, their point guard position is much weaker now, I think that the style of having point guards who can shoot, whether it's Jason Terry or whoever else they want to throw in there because they've been rotating it around a little bit, all these guys that they have now can shoot.
No. Avery Bradley, their starting point guard.
He can knock the three. He can knock
no,
the three.
No, he cannot. He's not a good three-point shooter. He's shooting like just a little over 30%.
Avery Bradley's also a lockdown defender, though, and they use Terry a lot. They get.
I'm just saying, but your argument was like they can all shoot threes, and like their starting point guard is exactly like Rondo. in that he can't shoot threes. So
no, but we talk about this all the time. And all right, maybe like okay, Avery Bradley isn't an elite 3-point shooter. He can certainly shoot the three better than Rondo. He can play amazing defense, and I don't care who starts. It's a matter of who is the last unit out there, and it gives them flexibility. You're forced to play Rondo. If you have Rondo, you're going to play Rondo. Avery Bradley, combined with Jason Terry, combined with Crawford, who they brought in, because Pierce can really kind of run that point.
You were saying Crawford. Oh, my God.
I am saying Crawford.
This is how bad your argument is.
No, Crawford. This is the thing. I'm not saying that any of these guys are better than Rondo. What I'm saying is that on this team, against the Heat, I would rather have Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, these guys running the show, and Jeff Green, who has emerged, who's playing pretty damn good basketball. I'd rather them kicking it out and having shooters on the perimeter that are open than literally having the ball in Rondo's hands the whole freaking time and allowing the entire Miami defense to sag off of him and bottle up everyone else. It's like having, you know, it's like the inverse of when people would talk about Shaq later in his career, how he clogged the lane and it was a problem for LeBron getting to the rim because Shaq was taking up too much space. It's the inverse of that, where Rondo, because he can't freaking shoot, is allowing them, the defense, to... He's, like, taking up too much offensive space, where he's not... That has a better potential of beating the Heat. Now, ideally, they'd have a much, much, much better backup as far as shooters go. You know, you could do a lot better as far as a random backup point guard who can shoot than what they have. But combined with the defense of Avery Bradley, plus Jason Terry who can shoot, Crawford who can shoot, the way that now the ball... These guys, instead of Rondo getting 14 assists a game and everyone else getting one, these guys are all getting four or five assists each now in that starting lineup. I think that's a legit... That's why I think they have a chance, because they always step their game up in the playoffs, every single one of them. I don't care if Paul Pierce looks like he can only go 10 minutes right now, because it's March. Wait till in June, when he saved all his energy from March and November and every other month.
All right, yeah, all right.
We'll see him go.
As much as you've talked about I just want a few points, then we got to move on to Houston. When we're talking about their ball handling, you don't want it in Rondo's hand dribbling the whole time. Rondo is the most efficient with that ball and has such great handles that it probably would help them in that situation instead of having a multitude of guys who don't have the kind of handles he has or the vision. Just saying. But I get the idea of him not shooting. Also, when I think you're going to beat the Heat, I think you got to... One thing that worries me with Boston is they don't have any... I think what can mess up the Heat, and that's why I like the Pacers as the ones and the Knicks more than Boston, is because they have size. And the Celtics do not have size, and you can't play the Heat at their own game. So you got to hit them differently. And I think the best way to hit them differently is attack their weakness, which is they have no big man presence. And Boston is a terrible rebounding team. They have all of their big men are there. They play Chris Wilcox plays significant minutes because of the injuries to their big men. And you can't tell me Jeff Green is like a legitimate big man because he's not at all. So that's why I worry about the Celtics, and that's why they won't get it done.
We'll see. We'll see. I mean, obviously, the odds on favorite would be, is that they're not going to get it
done. 28th in rebounding. That is awful.
We can't sleep on them. We can't sleep on them.
You can't sleep on their savviness, though. They'll put in them. They'll make it a good series just because they have this grit.
I'll give you that. If a Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett healthy team was ever swept out of a series. I mean, they're going to make it six games at least.
They have so much grit. I mean, I'll give them that, but they're not going to. They can't pull it off.
We'll see.
All right, move on to Houston.
All right, so Houston.
Why don't you start? Tell me why Houston will not make it far.
I'm gonna take the angle here that they're not legit, and this is tough for me because I love watching Houston play. I love this young team, and I think that in years to come, a tweak here, a tweak there, and by no means is Daryl Morey claiming this is a finished project. This is always a work in progress for him. But once they start tweaking the team, now that they're happy with the core. And start adding pieces that really fit to augment everything, maybe improve the defense, I think they'll be a contender. But this year, I don't think they're legit for two main reasons. One, the first one being that they are so inexperienced outside of James Harden in the playoffs. I mean, they've got Chandler Parsons, Jeremy Lin. Their power forward, is it going to be Monte Ellis in the playoffs? Is it going to be Thomas Robinson? I mean, they traded away their whole core, good long-term moves, their whole power forward corpse, but, bringing in Thomas Robinson, a good long-term move, but now you've got even less experience at the position. And I like Ashiq a lot. I think he's the one guy who in the playoffs would serve them well as the pace slows down, because he's such a great half-court defender, and their defense is completely different with him on the court. But that's not going to be enough to make up for that inexperience factor. I think they're going to have some growing pains in the playoffs. It's a different style of play. I think that the pace that they play at in the regular season is awesome to watch. It's a lot of fun. They shoot a lot of efficient shots at threes and drives to the basket, but it's going to slow down in the playoffs. And I just don't see them getting stops on defense. So for me, it's the two big things of, one, they're inexperienced, and two, their defense is so weak that they're going to have to adjust to the playoff pace, and I think that's going to exploit them a little bit. So they might win a series, perhaps at most get into the Western Conference Finals.
If Houston makes it to the Western Conference Finals, they'll call that a huge coup.
That's a huge win. At the start of this season, before they got Harden, like going into training camp, I mean, if you would have said that,
it's that's over. Nuts. So, that would have been crazy.
Hat tip to Morey.
I would never have seen it.
I just don't think they're legit.
I love Houston. I think you're definitely right. They're not done building. They've still got a lot to work on because of their youth, especially. But the way they're constructed, it's just, everything makes so much sense on that team, and that's one of my favorite things about them. Like, what an amazing job Houston's done, because everybody slides into the role perfectly. There's a reason they brought you aboard. And I'll tell you why, I'm real excited about Houston. You were talking about their speedy style doesn't really translate to the playoffs, which is true. Most of the time it does not, but I think that could actually help them in that, you know, if they slow the game down a bit, or the fact that Ashiq's in there more, they're a better team in the half court on defense, especially with Ashiq out there, who's going to play more minutes because it's the playoffs. And if he's out there, their defense is their weakness. It's clearly not their offense. And so I think that's going to help them a lot. But I also think, I just think the way they're built, they take the best shots all the time. The corner three, the highest statistical shots, that gives me, like, they live on the corner threes. They drive, dish. It's beautiful basketball. And what it means is, it means that on any night, they can beat anyone. But because of their youth and inexperience, that's why they're struggling to even like establish themselves in the Western Conference scene right now. That's why they're at, I think they're sitting at, are they sitting at 7th right now? Yeah, sitting at 7th.
Yeah.
And they could easily, but the way they play ball and how if they get the growth and they get comfortable in the system, I mean, you're talking one of the top seeds in the West for years, in my opinion, perennial powerhouse, because they're just too smart. And if the shots fall, they can beat anyone. Because the basketball is just too smart. I mean, it's too efficient. Everything works perfectly. So that's why I think, you know, if the stars align, this team can go deep, deep into the playoffs and beat anyone.
Yeah, you know, it'll be a fascinating... They're going to be so... I mean, they're always fun to watch. But it's made even more fun by the fact that Daryl Morey is such a mad scientist, whether his moves work or not. I mean, the idea that this team and its style of play is so based around taking the most statistically efficient shots, the highest percentage shots you can, or the best, you know, return on investment, if you will, shots that you can, and seeing how that works out and bringing in guys who fit that.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see, will it scale? Because they play such a fast pace that they get a lot of these shots. So, like, cool, they score a lot. The defense is a whole separate issue. But my interest is, you would think, in theory, that even if you had less possessions, the fact that they're taking such efficient shots,
it should keep going.
Would
exactly.
Scale correctly. Yeah, like other teams that are less
efficient.
That's
what I'm saying. That's why I think it will.
I'm interested.
I think
we'll see. I mean, it's tough to say, because the difference would be, I mean, it's not a computer simulation. So these guys are going to have to be comfortable playing at a different pace.
Yeah.
And that's going to force them to change a little bit. Whereas the Spurs, you know, these other teams that are more established,
the human element might throw them off.
How it happens.
Yeah, on exactly. Paper, so it makes sense, but yeah.
Right. And that's why I say this year, they're not legit. But without question, with a full training camp, with Thomas Robinson, with Ashiq, with that core just ready to roll next year, I think the sky's the limit for this team. And who knows if Morey's even done. I mean, you know, it's tough to say. It'll probably depend a little bit on how they do now. But it's a fascinating team to watch. I just think that it's a year too soon.
I think two quick blurbs. I think in the half court, one thing that could go in their favor, as I get it, maybe it'll be harder in some situations to get these high percentage shots, harder for them to run it. But just the fact that they have such great penetrators in Harden and in Lin is a pretty good penetrator. Like, I think that's how they can still create these shots in the half court. And they've proven that I mean, if you watch their games, they prove that on a nightly basis, that they can still get these good looks. So I think that's not necessarily a huge problem. I think it's if the, just the shots go in and they're comfortable doing it. But another thing, you're talking about Thomas Robinson. You know, I'm excited about Monte Yunus. And I've been watching him a lot.
Yeah,
this dude is a 7-footer, and he's starting to shoot the three ball incredibly well. And that's exactly what this team needs. And we were talking about it. We were talking about how great would it be if Dirk Nowitzki was traded to Houston. Because we think Dallas needs to dump him anyway.
Fit, yeah. Maybe they don't even need to. Not
they don't need to.
Dirk, but maybe that skill set is...
That kind of skill set, though. A stretch power forward. You know, bring the big men away from the paint. If Monte Yunus is drilling threes, you got to have a big guy guarding him, running out to him. Because he's 7 foot, you know?
Yeah.
And so a big guy's running out to him, opening the lane for Harden and Lin to get easy buckets. And if they try to stay in there, just kicks it out to this giant 7-footer drilling threes. That's why I'm excited to see him. I can't wait to see him in the playoffs.
They got a nice roster. Yeah, I tell you what, the game that I went to in Brooklyn, which it was they were playing the Rockets, and it was the game right after the Robinson trade. So they didn't have Robinson yet, and they didn't have the guys they just traded away, Patterson and Morris. So Monte Yunus, really for one of the first times all season, got huge minutes. And I was thoroughly impressed with how comfortable he looked. Because I was excited to see him. I knew about the guy, I knew he was a pick, and what he brought to the table physically.
Gotta have a lot of confidence with that hair.
He looked so confident, and just more, not even necessarily confident, but just comfortable. Like, I had stuff to know where his mindset was, but he didn't look out of place, and he's played good ball since. So that is fascinating. I just, like I said, I mean, to me, the big thing is experience, and it is so rare for a first foray type team, like, oh, it's your first time making the playoffs with this core, to make a run. That I just can't see them. If they were like first in the West or, you know, top three, maybe it's different because they're just so good. But this is a team that is playing such great offensive ball, struggles defensively.
Number one offensively. Points per game.
Yeah.
29th in points allowed.
103.
Yeah.
So,
they're 29th in points allowed. But when Ashik's out there, they're like, I'm pretty sure they're in like the top 10. They're around the top 10.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So we'll see. It's going to be good stuff. It's going to be good playoffs. Yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to toss in the?
I'm exhausted.
Yeah, we gotta go take a nap now.
we dropped too much knowledge.
So many knowledge darts just being tossed. Yeah. So remember, if you could think of a segment or a title for that segment that you just enjoyed the living crap out of,
yeah, it was really
good.
Let
us know. Drop us a line. You know. So
why not?
All right. Well, what do we got coming up for the Cavs this week? Do we even know their schedule?
Oh, they play tonight. They play Dallas, and then I think they play the Spurs tomorrow. So, yes.
West Coast swing, yeah?
Yeah, it's going to be ugly.
We'll see.
Dallas will be all right. Dallas on a back-to-back. So, we might be able to hit him pretty good.
Yeah, well, this will be a good test for the Youngs because, you know, late in the season with Kyrie out, got to stay motivated to keep fighting, keep playing hard. So, we'll see how Dion and company do. But, all right. So, we'll probably have a podcast later in the week talking about those Western games. Thanks for listening. And, again, check us out on the blog, thebottomupshow.blogspot.com. We're on iTunes. We're on Twitter. Everywhere else, take care.